Hello, and welcome to the Art of the Cut podcast, brought to you in partnership with Frame.io. My name is Steve Hallfish. I'm a feature film and documentary editor. For more than 7 years, I've been speaking to my colleagues in film, TV, and docs about the art and craft of editing. If you're interested in reading this interview with visual support and clips and trailers, head on over to blog.frame.io, where there's a ton of great expert content for film professionals of all types. We're more than halfway through our summer blockbuster season, where we're bringing you Art of the Cut episodes twice a week. I hope you've been enjoying the double shot of editorial goodness each week. I'm really proud to announce today that with this very special episode, Art of the Cut celebrates its 300th interview. I can't believe it myself. Starting with my two earliest interviews with Oscar winner Mark Sanger of Gravity and Oscar nominee Joe Walker of 12 Years a Slave. After more than 7 years, I've interviewed almost every living Oscar winner from the last 30 years, including people like Walter Murch, Thelma Schoonmaker, Ann V. Coates, Carol Littleton, Alan Heim, Paul Hirsch, Michael Kahn, Arthur Schmidt, Joel Cox, David Brenner, Claire Simpson, Steve Rotter, Richard Chu, Conrad Buff, Lee Smith, Margaret Sixel, Tom Cross, Billy Goldenberg, Kirk Baxter, Chris Dickens, Martin Walsh, Pietro Scalia, and Stephen Mirioni, among so many others, and that list just makes me smile. I honestly never know who will end up on an episode of Art of the Cut. I speak with so many in-demand editors that they often do their best to call in for our interviews, but sometimes when Kevin Feige calls and says he wants to see a cut, you might lose one of your interviewees. That's what almost happened today. We planned on speaking with Lee Folsom Boyd, ACE, and Matt Schmidt, the editors of Black Widow, but Lee only makes it for about the last 15 minutes of the interview. But Art of the Cut's loss will be Marvel fans' gain somewhere down the line. But here I am burying the lead. The other unexpected guest on Art of the Cut this week is none other than the director of Black Widow, Kate Shortland. Kate is an Australian director whose most recent films before Black Widow were Somersault, Lore, and Berlin Syndrome. She'd also directed numerous shorts and TV series and miniseries. As for the editors of Black Widow, Lee Folsom Boyd is a one-woman blockbuster editor in her own right. Previous projects include Spider-Man Far From Home, Pirates of the Caribbean Dead Men Tell No Tales, Ant-Man, Fast and Furious, and Furious 5, 6, and 7, Total Recall, and others. Not to mention TV series Magnum P.I., Deadwood, Bull, and more. Matt Schmidt is also a member of Team Blockbuster, with a filmography that includes Avengers Endgame, Avengers Infinity War, Captain America Civil War, and Captain America The Winter Soldier, among many others. Matt is also from Hollywood editing royalty. His grandfather is Arthur Schmidt, who has been a guest on Art of the Cut before. Arthur worked on Back to the Future, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and won an Ace Eddie and an Oscar for editing Forrest Gump, among others. Kate, it's wonderful to have a director with us on Art of the Cut. It's rare. Thank you so much for joining us. You are in Australia right now, correct?
Yeah, in Australia, in lockdown.
In lockdown. And from what I remember, we were actually planning on doing this interview with Lee and Matt, at least, a year ago. Tell me a little bit about the schedule and what happened and how close were you to locking the film when COVID hit?
Matt, were we about 4 weeks out from locking the film?
Yeah, for the most part. We just started our final mix. We were in the first week of our final mix on the mixing stage and just locking reels as we went. So we're really close to the finishing stage. Very close.
Wow. I've talked to a couple of editors that have had productions that have had the opportunity because of one thing or another, Tom Cruise breaking his ankle, Harrison Ford breaking his leg, to postpone or have a couple of weeks or months even of space to reformulate and rethink and step back from the movie and get a fresh look at it. Did that happen on this film? And what kind of changes happened because of that?
I think we had quite a few endings. Like a lot of Marvel films, you would have a lot of options for the ending. So we were testing those endings initially with the audience. But then, of course, when COVID hit, we were just looking at it ourselves. So it was the editors and I and our producers and Scarlett Johansson, who was our EP. And I think what ended up happening, which was a good thing, was we ended up taking out quite a bit at the ending, didn't we, Matt? We left it more open. That was a lot to do with Kevin, I think.
Oh, yeah, totally. We kept on circling around and trying different endings and trying different endings. And it really kind of allowed us to have a little bit more freedom and a little bit more time. And then we can have a bigger discussion and we could look at it one way, come back the next day and look at it again and discuss and try multiple options instead of rushing to lock the picture and hit the release date and hit all the deliverable schedules and stuff. So with the pandemic slowing us down, it really gave us time to think about and sit on and let it take the right path to where we should really end the movie. Because it was a hard decision. So there were so many good endings. There were so many great ways that it could have ended.
There's one thing I miss, which is Rachel Weisz and David Harbour kissing. We cut that out, but it was just time. We just needed to wrap up this beast, didn't we?
Yeah, and that's the thing that we're always up against. Kate shot a wonderful movie, but it was just too much movie. It was way too long. And then we were moving so fast from the beginning because we got done shooting and then we had the director's cut and then we showed the studio and then it was preview and then it was preview and then it was preview and then it was additional photography. So we were moving fast and furious during that whole time. And so it was really hard to take a step back and watch it. When the pandemic hit, it was a blessing in disguise because we could take a step back. We got it probably an extra 6 weeks, I would think, out of it. The visual effects got better. We had more time to finesse the end of the movie and pick which ending we wanted. And then Kate and I and Lee got to go to the mixing stage for 3 weeks. And it was just us. It was amazing because we never have time for that stuff. We're always in visual effects meetings that take 5 hours or locking the picture while the mix is going and remoted in, and it worked out really well as it could, because it's weird to say that the pandemic worked out well, but we made the best of the moment.
Kate, this is so wonderful to have a director here to talk about these things. One of the questions that I had before I knew that you were going to be in this is that because Lee and Matt have done a bunch of Marvel movies before, they know the beast that is the Marvel universe and how things have to work and what is expected. And they'd been through a bunch of meetings with Kevin and seen what played and what didn't. Obviously, it's your own vision. It's your storytelling. It's your voice throughout the movie as the director. But how much do you have to rely on the editors for that Marvel flavor?
I was really lucky because I had two incredible editors. And I think it wasn't so much the Marvel flavor. It was more that I could just rely on them. And I think initially we were in London and they kept saying, Kate, you've got to come into the edit. And I was really angry. I was like, I don't want to bloody come into the edit. I'm trying to shoot this monstrous beast. But I knew afterwards why, because as soon as you get into the edit and you stop principal photography, it's so fast that it's crazy to say that, because you would think we would have all the time in the world, but it was really fast. So that's how I relied on them, in terms of not only their knowledge of special effects, but their knowledge and their stamina, really, because I had never worked like this before where, I mean, I kept telling them to go home. It was pretty insane, wasn't it, Matt? Some days Matt was doing 7 days a week, and you just think, that's really hard. That is very hard to keep your positivity. And he was always kind to me, and so was Lee. They were always good people, even though they were really exhausted. It was a great experience, even though it was bloody hard.
It was bloody hard. And that's the thing that we as editor, you know, we're locked in our room and we just know that there's visual effect sequences to get out. There's things that we want to show the director. There's things that we need her to look at and we need to get moving on early. And in our short-sightedness, sometimes we lose sight of the pressure that Kate was under and how shooting and production and everything. And we're just like, hey, can you come up and look at this stuff? And she's like, no, you don't understand. I don't have time. And it was an interesting process when we started moving into post to see how there was a disconnect when we're in London, and not a disconnect personally, but she was shooting the movie and it was a big movie and it's so many moving parts and so many things. And that's where Lee and I think were valuable, where we knew kind of how to keep the system moving. Even though Kate didn't want to come in right away, we could sit there and tell visual effects, hey, hold off, everything's going to be fine, or let's move with this. Here's some things that we can do to wait till we get into post. And that's the invaluable stuff that we brought, where it was like, Kate, it's okay. You know, we're asking you to come up, but if you can't come up, that's fine. Totally get it. We'll just have to hit the ground a little harder.
The stressful part, which I hadn't dealt with before, and these guys, of course, had, was that we have to hand over shots.
Hand over shots to visual effects.
Yeah. So you have to commit. I think visual effects want us to commit even while we're still shooting. We have to start handing over shots. And I was really aware, because I'd only done tiny films, of budget. But I was like, how can I hand over this shot when it's going to cost $100,000 or $200,000? And we might change. And that's just a part of it. That was something I learned. You have to relinquish stuff very early and move forward. Keep going. Keep moving.
Is there anything that you've been able to do on previous films or on this film to talk to the editors and give them some kind of ideas, I don't know, maybe intentions or something, before you start shooting? Because like you said, once you start shooting, the director's buried.
I cut, I think, 6 short films. One was about children, one was about armed forces and guerrilla warfare, one was about elements like weather elements and the ether. And I cut those together with an editor to sort of show all my heads of department what we were dealing with and the way that we may deal with different movements or elements. But I remember the first time Matt showed me the beginning of the film, which he'd cut, and I got really teary. And that beginning is virtually the same. We've had to shorten it. Matt's not.
Unfortunately, we did have to shorten it.
Was pulling teeth because we really loved all the material and I loved how he'd put it together. But I can think of a couple of sequences that changed quite dramatically. But a lot of them, the editors had a really great sort of handle on what we were making from very early on, I would say.
Was there anything you were able to do to help them be on target with that stuff, or is it just great editing?
I don't know. I forget what your wall was. What was your wall with all the pictures?
Jeff Bauman, our visual effects supervisor, he made a whole wall of images that I picked, and we knew what we were making. We knew we were making something gritty and intimate, and we wanted it to be cinematic as well as action-packed.
Yeah, and sometimes it's hard to get the director's aesthetics or what they're going for. But once we started getting dailies in, the film really spoke for itself. It was so beautiful and nuanced. And it wasn't where we sat there and were like, oh, how's this going to go together? We can go this. Or it was so beautiful. It's just really.
Some sequences we struggled a lot. But one of them that was interesting was that fight scene, Matt, in the apartment between two sisters, which has ended up being one of the favorite scenes in the film. But that was shot really differently to, I suppose, some of the fights Marvel had. Would you think, Matt?
Yeah, for sure. I think it was one of those things that we started out where we shot some stuff and then we went in and picked up a couple beats here and there just to make it have a little bit more energy. But yeah, that was an interesting sequence, actually, because it did have a few different iterations and it evolved into something pretty special. But yeah, that was one of those things that we struggled on, especially aesthetically at first. But I think it came around and turned out great. I mean, just like the rest of the film, the action's unique. It's raw. There's a rawness to it all that even in dailies you watch it, you can kind of see how it's going to go together and see what it's going to become.
How does a scene like that evolve from the cut that you do during dailies to what we finally see? What are some things that happen that you see in context or that you realize that as good of a cut as you thought you might have had during dailies, things needed to change?
I think I'd always envisaged it as very emotional. And then when I was on set, I did what one of our producers calls, I heard the call of the wild. So I went really crazy with the girls. And we got these dailies back and the girls were so emotional in the kitchen. There's this part where Scarlett is strangling her sister, Florence Pugh. I saw the rushes. I was like, oh, fuck, we've got to cut some of this emotion out. It's just too much. And I thought, this is nothing like a Marvel movie. It's never going to work. Anyway, we sent a cut to Kevin and he said, I've seen the dailies. You have to put all the emotion back in. And then Matt was really great because he could use the emotion that he wanted, but pull out all the icky stuff. So it ended up being the right mix. I think it's like cooking a bit, isn't it? You put too much of something in and then you take something out and you feel the lack of it. I think what was beautiful about that sequence was we were able to go back in and reshoot, and that was in collaboration with Matt. So Matt could actually look at it with second unit director and myself and say, this is exactly what we need. And then we could go back in, and that's his experience cutting fights in Endgame or wherever. He could see, oh, we really need this shot because it's not going to work without it.
And you don't know until when we sat down and watched the whole movie, you get a real feel for where the emotion is and where the emotion's lacking. And if we need to go back into that fight to build a little bit more emotion or intensity. But I think it ended up having a nice balance to it. And again, with the production, we have that time and we have the days to sit there and go, okay, where do you want to go back in? And they're always open and welcome to trying things and seeing what's lacking and seeing how to enhance and make the best movie possible. And Marvel's they're always pretty great about seeing how they can accommodate it and fit it into the schedule if you need to.
When you were worried about that emotion in that scene, was it a tonal thing? I think of directors as being arbiters of tone. Was that what you were worried about? Talk to me a little bit about tone and post.
Yeah, I think what I saw on screen frightened me because it didn't feel like a Marvel film and it didn't really feel like a fight in certain aspects of it, especially the intimate sort of material where Scarlett is really strangling her sister and stuff. When you hear the girls screaming at each other and emoting and not the usual sort of post grunts, it was more, she was screaming at her, stay down, stay down. That doesn't feel like a fight. That feels more like a domestic dispute. And so to see something like that in a Marvel film really frightened me because I was like, oh, the studio is going to hate this. And so I instantly thought, of course, you've messed up. But then Matt and I, with Kevin, were able to go back in and just pull out pieces of it so that it would work on both levels. So you could retain the intimacy of the rawness of it, but also escalate it. And when we put the music in as well by Lorne Balfe, it also elevates it because he created this very raw percussive score that Matt could really fine tune it with. So I think it was all those elements, you know, visual effects as well that helped, because otherwise it becomes turgid. And we have to remember that we're making spectacle as well as we're making something for people to enjoy, not nil by mouth.
Yeah. I think the first cut I did, because I had it all in there, it was really intense. It was not off-putting, but it made you feel a little bit uncomfortable at times, I think, because it did feel like more of a domestic quarrel between two sisters that just went too far than a fight sequence in an action movie. And I think we found a happy medium through trial and error and reworking and working and getting some extra pieces. It was all fun to cut. It was all fun to do, but it's all time consuming. And then you have the 80 something days of dailies to deal with after that. So it's a fun juggle.
You mentioned that you thought that, oh, this doesn't seem like a Marvel movie, but it seems like you were chosen to direct this, obviously for your vision and your voice, which sounds like maybe what they wanted was, we don't really want this to be like just another Marvel movie.
That's one of the things I struggle with actually when I watch the film now, is that it's like a mix of genres, and some critics have commented on that. It's partly a Kate Shortland film and then it slips into other more familiar perhaps genre and then it comes out again. So it's not like you're watching a Bourne film or a Mission film or a Bond film, which tends to stay in one genre. This is like a family drama and then it's an action movie. And that is also us, of course, shooting the script. And so the script jumps around, and that was something for me that I had to learn to love, I think, because we're not used to doing that. When you do an art house film, you really tonally, you're in the one film and in this kind of film, and that's Kevin as well. He doesn't have a problem with walking from a really high impact action sequence into a comedy moment, into a this moment. I think that's a lot of who he is, and that's reflected in the type of films they're making.
Yeah, they're always thinking outside the box. I think that's why people get engaged by it. It's not a Marvel movie. It's more a Kate Shortland movie than a Marvel movie. And there's that beauty in it that she brings, and they expect to see the spectacle. So you have the spectacle. But yeah, like Kate just said, Kevin's very smart about that. And they rarely say no to any idea because it always leads to something pretty great. And if it doesn't, you tone it back. It's just like Kate said in the kitchen scene. It's like, hey, look at this. We're thinking about doing this. And he's like, no, embrace it. Do that. And that's kind of how the whole process went. It's an interesting movie tonally, but it functions because the base is there and the base is the family. And you start the movie and you go with them for the whole ride because I think the setup is so well at the beginning of the movie that even though they're a different age, you get to know them and you go with them and you just go for the ride. It's pretty amazing that it really functions like it does.
A lot of the Florence Pugh and David Harbour stuff seemed like improv. I'm assuming it was improv. What kind of difficulties does that pose in post when you have a lot of improv?
Well, I'm just going to say as a director, for me, it didn't pose any. And it was really disappointing because we had to cut a lot of David's improv, which was really tragic because certain governments in the world, I'm not going to comment on who, don't want to hear what he has to say. So, yeah, we had to kind of do a special David Harbour cut. But for me, what was beautiful, you get that freshness of performance. And then for the editors, I'd let Matt comment on that.
I know this is when I really wish Lee was here because she cut the dinner scene and there was a lot of ad-libbing and jokes and just an overwhelming amount of material in that. But look, at ad-libbing is great. Going off the cuff and seeing where it takes you, you know, the struggle that we have is on the day, it's really funny. Everybody's around watching their monitors and on set and it's hilarious. And then you get dailies in, you watch dailies and the take, it's amazing. It's funny. And then you like throw it into the cut and it just, it doesn't fit. It doesn't feel like the movie. It doesn't fit the tone of the scene, or maybe it fits and maybe it works there, but then all of a sudden the scenes around it don't feel right. So that's where it becomes really tricky and the balance is hard to gauge until the movie's really built as a whole. And then you can kind of rewatch stuff. And then we go back to stuff and we're like, hey, this is working, but what if we go back in and see if we can insert some more jokes that didn't work before now that we know the tone and the feel of the movie. So it's always trial and error. And it's really sad that there was amazing stuff that was left on the cutting room floor. And all the actors, I mean, all of them are just funny and on it and witty and smart. And they all had great stuff, which also becomes tricky because you get this abundance of riches and you're like, oh my gosh, they're just sitting there reading their lines. All of a sudden, instead of one line, you have 20 that are great. And finding that balance and finding what works is time consuming.
And the improv can take the scene in a totally different direction. And then you're like, oh, how do we get out of this if we go down this rabbit hole of some kind of improv?
Well, yeah. And that's sometimes why you rein things back. And sometimes the best stuff's not used because it takes you down a path that you don't want to go down. There's really funny stuff, but you might not have characters reacting to it because you shot it the last setup and there's no coverage or no master. There's nowhere to cut to. But what they're doing is really funny. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, I really want to use this, but I don't know how to utilize it and how where it goes. And it doesn't fit in. And that's the sad part, too, because they have to make their day and they have to keep on moving on because it would be great to you get these great lines, you get these great ad libs at the end of the day, and then you don't have time to turn the camera around and get everybody's responses or move that story or move that joke or idea forward. But I think the movie turned out rather funny. There's some stuff in the additional scenes, the deleted scenes, that's pretty funny.
Storytelling has to be difficult in this kind of Marvel cinematic universe because you've got the fandom that knows every little inside and outside and who's who and all this stuff. And then you've got people who just want to go to the movies and see a movie, and you have to storytell for those people as well. Can you talk to me about walking that balance between the universe of Marvel and just telling a good story that's exclusive to this movie?
For me, it was about making a film that most people could walk off the street and watch, and they hadn't had to have watched every Marvel film to get it. And I think that was the producer's idea as well. It could stand quite separate. But we also used things within the edit and the storytelling that sort of were threaded through earlier films and are threaded in later films because our film slots in between two films that are already made. So there's a vest that reappears and there's certain things that are commented on within the narrative. And I'm really surprised by how much moviegoers or Marvel fans relate to those elements. They're crazy. I mean, the producers call it fetish objects. It's like a fetish for these beautiful little gems that come from other films. And that I was watching Breaking Bad last night, actually, season 3. And that's so beautifully cut. And the narrative is so great because they're threading something through a cigarette in an ashtray in one episode, and then they tell the story in the next episode of how that got there. And I just love that kind of cutting. It's like a patchwork. And that was actually really fun to play with in this film, that we could use elements of past narratives and thread them through this and then propel her into the next film. And it was all done post her death.
Yeah, and that was the challenge. How do you tell a unique standalone movie when everybody knows what happens to your main character? I can't imagine how it was in the script stage. When I came on, the script is already great, and that was all flushed out.
Talk a little bit about that process of taking the film from the editor's cut, which is really not the editor's cut. It's really the script. It's the realization of the script, and then getting that to the director's cut. What are some of the things that occurred to you as you watched the editor's cut that you then tried to accomplish in the director's cut?
She thought everything was fantastic. It was a walk in the park. We barely had any work to do. We went out for lunches and dinners. It was easy.
The part that we struggled with, or that we always were conscious of, was this was Natasha's film. So you have to make her central, even when she's not on screen. The narrative has to somehow comment on her or hark back to her or be propelling her story forward, because otherwise it shouldn't be in the film, because this is about Black Widow. So that was something that we pushed as we kept moving forward through the cuts. And then the other thing, strangely enough, was the film became far more dialogue driven as the cuts kept moving forward. Mm. And that, again, and we keep talking about Kevin, but that was Kevin's influence saying, don't be afraid to let the film slow down. So in the middle section of the film, we had girls at the diner. Then we have the girls in a car sequence. Then we have them quite soon after that at a family dinner, which is 10 minutes long. So there was all these drama scenes, and we had taken some of those out or cut them right back. And as the film moved towards fine cut, Kevin was really pushing to not be afraid of those scenes and to let the film slow down, which is quite unusual for an action film.
Yeah, just let it live how it was shot. And that's always a surprising thing to me, because we do get to a point in the movie where everything just slows down, takes its time. It's dialogue scene after dialogue scene after dialogue scene, and you're totally engaged. You're following the story. You're immersed in it, and you really kind of get to live in the beauty of Kate's movie. But also you have producers and studio execs and everybody that are embracing it and being supportive of it. And it really helps to make the best movie possible, because it's a big collaboration. That was one of those things that Kate always asked us about when we were in London. She was like, okay, so what's it going to be like when we get back? And Lee and I just kept on talking. It was going to be great. It's going to be lovely. We'll formulate a game plan and we'll go in there and we'll do the director's cut. But knowing that time's always a problem, you're always trying to trim stuff out. And they're great about going, hey, what about this? And they remember the script. They remember dailies. They all sit there and say, hey, we watched the director's cut. There was a longer version of this. There was something there. And so we would show them the longer versions. We would show them the first pass or the editor's assembly on some scenes, and they would embrace it. And we did it for time. And also, can we sustain the stuff that we like in this movie that's supposed to be an action film and we're moving forward? And they were like, no, let's just embrace it. So it was a really nice collaboration that Kate and the studio had and that we all worked with. It was very pleasant.
Kate, you mentioned something early on that I loved, because we talk about it often on Art of the Cut, which is the importance for an editor to make the director feel safe in the edit suite. Can you talk about that a little bit and how important that is? There's the cutting, being a good editor, and then there's being a good person and someone that is a collaborator that's protecting you.
Yeah, I suppose I always felt they had my back. And it's like when we shoot some really beautiful moments and then we shoot some absolutely bad moments, like bad acting, bad directing, bad just all around. And I knew that these guys had my back and that that stuff wasn't going to see the light of day. And that's a big relief. And also, they weren't afraid of telling me if something wasn't working. And because I don't really have a good sense of humor, or not slapstick, I suppose. And they would say, Kate, this is funny. You've got to have this in the film. And that was really great as well, especially Lee, I think, because she had a lot of this more slapstick stuff with Alexei, the father, like the prison and the dinner scene and things like that. So I was able to really trust them. And we had my daughter in the edit a lot. We would talk about our families. And neither of these editors, which was also great, neither of us would sit there and chat for hours. But when we did, it was nice because most of the time we were working and I could really rely on them in terms of action because I didn't have that experience. And they never made me feel lesser. I always felt like my opinion mattered, but I could trust them. They could make something drive forward and work with visual effects. It was like a really soft landing for me to work with these guys. Imagine if I was working with really hard-ass people doing a film like this, it would have been really stressful, but I had two particularly lovely people.
Yeah, these movies are too hard. I couldn't imagine working with somebody that was just a hard ass or another editor I didn't get along with or a director where we weren't seeing eye to eye. You just, Lee, look at that.
Hi, Lee.
Right on cue when I was saying how much I hate working with Lee. And Kate was a gem, but Lee was so
just when you
horrible.
Were saying that it was so good to work with another editor you love. There she is. She appears just when you say.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. See, exactly. She was waiting for it. She was listening.
She was.
I wish I was more running down the hall. Get out of the way. I apologize to you all. I am so sorry.
We know you're working
best
hard.
Best laid plans.
This is kind of how the edit went. She would just always show up at the last minute, come in with all the good stuff and be like, oh, yeah, hey, look, I'm here to save the day. I'm sure this interview, Matt's blowing it, so let's let Lee chime in and fix it.
So we were just talking about the fact that Kate said how protected she felt she was with the two of you in the edit suite and how important that is. I just wanted to have your input on the importance of that as a trait of an editor.
I think it's crucial. I think that your relationship with the director and working with another editor is so key to be in a safe space, to build that relationship and to make sure that we're having that communication and that we're able to communicate freely and openly with each other and just be able to showcase, you know, scenes just to get input at such an early stage of the edit so that she knows what she needs to shoot moving forward and we know what her ideas are for the scene. And just that relationship with the director is so crucial. And I love working with Kate and Matt and so flattered and I feel so good that you did feel like you were protected with us because Matt and I took our jobs very seriously, and it was all about getting the best performances from the footage and just always talking to Kate to see what her vision for the scenes were. So I'm glad she felt protected because we felt that was part of our job too. We're there to help her bring her vision of the film to life. And I don't think that you can do it if everyone doesn't feel like they're in a safe space with each other.
Tell me a little bit about that communication. What kind of notes Kate was giving or that Lee you were hearing and how a note early on can help you with a scene later.
Right. Well, talking with Kate about story and character arcs, I think is really important because when she's working with the actors on set, trying to get them to hit an emotional moment or to follow through with their arc, story-wise, it's informative for Matt and myself to take those notes that she's communicated to us so that we're tracking it within the scenes as we're building on the story from scene to scene. And so Kate telling us and sharing with us what she's trying to get and what the scene means on a deeper level is informative for where the film is going and how Matt and I can look for the correct moments in the footage so that we're delivering what Kate's getting out of the actors. So the communication is paramount to being able to see that through thread.
Kate, can you think of a scene with subtext in the movie, and how is that subtext realized and how is it honed in editing?
I remember one instance, there's quite a funny sequence outside the helicopter. And I remember Matt and I talking about it. I said, oh, maybe that shot could go there, or that could, you know, just, this is what I imagined. I imagined following Florence and going with Florence and allowing the others to leave frame. And then Matt said, oh, I see why you did this crazy coverage. He was like, oh, it's kind of making sense why you would cover something like this. And that was one instance, just in terms of the mechanics of the material. But then I think what was interesting for us to talk about in terms of subtext was often Florence and Scarlett, Yelena and Natasha, because Florence's character was always hiding something. She was always hiding her real emotions, and that she really wanted her sister, but in the scenes she's rejecting her. So that took place right from the early fight scene when Matt cut the first fight, and then when Lee was cutting the later scenes in the diner and stuff. So we talked a lot about what the characters wanted or what they were hiding. And I mean, what was great with those girls, when you're cutting and you're actually just choosing takes, because there were so many good moments, rather than you were desperate to get a moment, we were spoiled. There was a richness to the material because you have such great actors.
So to explore that idea of Florence hiding something, was it a choice of, oh, this take, she seems more like she's hiding something, or would it be a reaction shot? How could you explore the subtext in post?
Well, interestingly enough, we shot a scene after the fight in the apartment in Budapest, and I wanted Florence to walk away and deliver a whole ton of exposition where she's never looking at her sister. And it looked amazing. And it was beautiful, and Matt did such a beautiful job cutting it. And the studio saw it and said, we have to reshoot it. They've got to stand still. Do you remember that, Matt?
Yeah.
Because the audience wasn't getting the story.
Mm.
And the studio was right. But it was a moment for me to kind of learn, oh, sometimes what I want as a filmmaker and what the story needs are two different things. And what we actually needed in that moment was for the story to land. So we reshot it and we got the girls to be very quite still. And she's still withholding. And Florence didn't want to reshoot it because she said, I wouldn't be looking at her. I'd be wanting to move away. Mm-hmm. But it was the right choice because we needed the audience to understand certain things and for that narrative to propel us further into the story.
Yeah, that's something we've talked about before on Art of the Cut, is on important story points, do you play them on or off camera? And so often you have to play them on camera, right? Because that is what seals those story points in the audience's mind.
In this case, that is correct. We had a beautiful tracking shot just following Yelena around the apartment, and she's walking away from her sister, and like, you get the intention, you really feel the separation. It's like they're here. And she goes this way, and she's saying all these things to her sister, and she's walking away from her, and it's like siblings fighting or unhappy with each other, or still trying to figure out their way with each other. And she's walking away as she gives this whole speech. And I thought it was fantastic. And when we showed it to an audience and to the studio, there's just a little bit of information that you miss. And then if you miss it, there's things down the road that don't land as well as they should. Mm-hmm. So it's a smart decision. And when they always allow you to go back in and do some additional photography, and it's easier when it's their idea. Yeah. And that's a textbook case where it really does land when it's on screen. You know, there's certain pieces of information that really have to be on screen for the audience members to really, they'll understand it, but for it to carry weight, sometimes it's got to be right there in front of you. Audience members are smarter than we think sometimes, but for it to really hit home and drive through the rest of the movie, it needs to be on screen. And that was textbook. I was like, hey, this isn't quite working. I thought it was working, but it wasn't landing as well as it should have. And we pivoted and we adjusted, we reshot, and it worked out really well.
And the weird thing is that scene might have been working better the way it was, but later scenes then don't work as well.
Yeah, if you're not taking that information that scene's trying to convey and really feel it, then yeah, down the line, it will suffer for sure. And we didn't change the dialogue. The dialogue stayed the same for the most part. I mean, maybe we added a couple words or some Russian or something, but the scene was the scene was the scene. Now they're just facing each other and having that discussion. They're still separated, which is nice. They're still doing their own thing. They're still off, not really engaged in each other still. So there's still that separation, but it's not playing it on somebody's back as they're walking away.
Got it. Hey, Lee, one of the things that Matt wanted to have you here for when we talked earlier about this was the longer dinner table scene with a lot of improvisation. And I would love to hear you talk a little bit about the difficulties of dealing with improvisation and the eye lines and trying to make sure that all that stuff worked in that very complex scene.
Yes, eye lines.
That scene was amazing because, like Kate said earlier, the footage is just an embarrassment of riches with these actors. And Kate covered it really well so that we had different moments for all the characters and for them to go through and really shine. And so when you're working with such wonderful actors like that, David Harbour is great at just ad-libbing and throwing out some lines. And then, of course, that seems somewhat contagious because then the other actors are like, I think I can do this too. And but then they throw out a few ad libs. And then all of a sudden you have several hours worth of dailies where ad libbing and just making some great moments. And there are very many times you don't use the ad libs on scenes like that. But the dinner scene, we were able to, I think, use some of David Harbour's physicality and his ad-libs and what he brought. And it really enriched the scene for the characters because it made it feel like a true family, like you would have a dysfunctional family at Thanksgiving sitting around the table just waiting to be excused and to be done with the meal. All of the characters really were bringing their A-game. And I think the ad-libs really helped for the scene. And you're talking about the complexity of the scene. I love that scene because it speaks to the heart of the movie being about family and each one of them having to own their own involvement when they were a young family as a cover story. And so really that scene explores that. One of the lines that Natasha says, it wasn't real. And I think in that scene, there's a moment for each of them where they realize it was real. So I love that scene because Kate was able to cover it from every character's point of view. And that really is evident in the final product. And keeping the eye lines and just, I think the approach that I found the most successful is just to keep speaking to their point of view when each of them had their moment and always come back ultimately to Scarlett's point of view since she's our thread that the story is weaving ultimately from her point of view, from her initial experiences. I think that's what drives that scene.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that Kate mentioned before you got on the call was that when they were trying to massage from the editor's cut to the director's cut, that it was very important to remember that it's Scarlett's movie, that it's Natasha's movie. So even in a scene like that, everyone's got to have their moment, but the focus is on Natasha.
Yeah, and that's what we kept trying to come back to. What's Natasha doing? What's Natasha feeling? What is her perspective and point of view for this scene? And how does it play through her eyes?
That was hard, wasn't it, Lee? Because often she's a very nonverbal character. Whereas, so we have characters that are really verbal who push into the scene. And then we have a character who is an observer of others. And so Lee had to really choose her moments and Matt as well, because often even in that scene and in the scene in the diner in Budapest, Florence is pushing the dialogue and Natasha's just answering it. So you have to show moments where you realize she's not speaking, but she's thinking.
So it's more about reaction shots.
Yeah, but what's she really thinking? And that was when we really got into the fine cut. We went back and back and back. I had to get more moments. The editors were trying to get more moments of Natasha because she had really strong actors around her that were very verbal.
Yeah, and just to, again, to see how she processed and how even the more subtle, nuanced reactions, how we could really showcase those moments.
Yeah, you're always looking for that nuance. And sometimes we miss it as editors. And the director comes in and is like, no, there's this little piece. And this is what I was going for here. And sometimes we find those and sometimes we don't. That's why having a relationship with the director and establishing it early on and getting their sensibility, it's easier to find that stuff as you're watching dailies, as you're watching the actors perform and do these things. But it takes a little while to get to the rhythm and get to the feel of how Kate works or different directors work and how they direct the actors and what's important to them and then what they really want to see come through.
I think what I would do next time is push for more dialogue, push the nonverbal character to have to speak more and then have the opportunity to cut it out. Because what we had was true to her, it's true to Natasha, but you almost have to push the character into uncomfortable territory and then be able to pull it back.
I just want to ask about collaboration a little bit. Lee and Matt, did you swap scenes at all? Did you pick scenes that you felt one person might be better for than another? Kate, did you feel like you wanted to give a scene to somebody else for any reason?
I always forget the process, Lee. I mean, it's been so long, but I started the movie a little bit earlier than Lee did. Mm-hmm. So I was cutting the first stuff that was shot, just kind of the nature of me being there. And then once Lee came on, we kind of looked at the script. We looked at the continuity and we're like, okay, here are the action scenes. Here's the other beats. And we separated the action scenes first so we wouldn't get overwhelmed, because the action scenes are pretty cumbersome and sometimes they take a while to figure out. And there's so many layers. There's storyboards, there's previs. We're cutting the previs and doing sound and music to these previous sequences before they even go and shoot them. So we're working with storyboard artists, we're previous artists, Kate. So we try to divvy up the action scenes the best we can so nobody's bogged down in those. And then some of it was a flip of a coin.
Yeah. And some of it was like, you should take this because I think this speaks to you, or one of us speaking up saying, I want to take that because I think it's going to be great, or for whatever reason. And then just obviously always supporting the other person just so that it worked out. And I think we did a great job. Obviously, we collaborated with each other, getting feedback from each other. But you asked, did we swap scenes around? No. I mean, I would ask Matt, hey, Matt, come look at this scene, see what you think. And he would say the same thing to me. But I think that the most important part was to support each other, too, to say, if you don't have a lot going on, I need a little more time with this scene. So can you take this scene?
Yeah,
and just always, communicating with each other. Yeah.
I'd sit there and go, Lee, I'm stuck in Dracoff's office. Will you take the dailies that are coming in? and she would say, of course.
And I would say, I'm still working in the dinner scene. Can you take this?
Exactly. So that's when you're working in dailies. And then as you were working into the director's cut, into the producer's cuts, then are you just spending a lot more time in each other's rooms, viewing reels and deciding on larger story issues together with Kate?
Yeah, we would do that with Kate. The one thing that I find for these big movies is the divide and conquer. I have scenes, Lee has scenes. Not that we're really territorial, but for how fast these movies go and how big they are, it's great if Kate can come into like my room, work with me. We go through reel two, then she goes into Lee's room and works on reel three. And then I'm sitting there in my room doing the notes for reel two. And so it's the best use of time, I find. I'm very familiar.
Right. You always have to keep pushing forward.
Yeah. I'm very familiar with the dailies outside the helicopter. Lee has watched them, but she might not be as familiar. So for ease of use and to expediency. But we always sit down. We're like, we watch the movie. We'll sit down. Everybody will get in a room, Kate, Lee, and I, and we'll watch it and be like, is there anything confusing? What's the story? And that was the great thing about this movie. It was a really big collaboration. And then we had the studio in there too sometimes. And it was easy to make the movie better with everybody's feedback and opinions. There wasn't any time that anybody was like, oh, nobody's listening to me. It was just really open and really great discussions.
Like Matt just said, it was such a joy to work on and to work with Kate and to work with Matt. And I was just so proud to be a part of the process and so incredibly thrilled that we were able to have a theatrical release during the tail end, whatever part we're in of the pandemic. And to see the fan reaction has been tremendous because we work hard on these movies. It's not, a 9-to-5 job. And so it's always nice to see the fans enjoying the product.
Absolutely. And that's a great note to end on. I could talk to you guys for the rest of the night, but thank you all, Kate, Matt, and Lee, for joining me on Art of the Cut.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
That's it for Art of the Cut this week. Thank you so much for listening. Again, these interviews are also available to read at blog.frame.io, where they're supported with great visual content, images, video clips, and more. Also, it's a great opportunity to check out the other expert content on the blog for filmmakers of all types. Also, check out my book, Art of the Cut, Conversations with Film and TV Editors, for a topic-driven, curated experience. Thanks to my guests, Black Widow director Kate Shortland, and editors Lee Folsom Boyd, ACE, and Matt Schmidt. Thanks also to Jake Gum for editing today's podcast using Adobe Audition. Thanks to Frame.io for their support of Art of the Cut and its pledge to keep this content coming your way. If this is a podcast that you got something out of, follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Steve Hullfish. And so you don't miss all the great upcoming interviews on the Art of the Cut podcast, subscribe to this podcast, and I'd love for you to review this podcast. Finally, if you have a friend in the film business or who aspires to be in the film business, make sure to tell them about the Art of the Cut podcast and blog.frame.io.